Welcome to Atlanta Business Radio. I am Lee Cantor, and I am not joined in the studio with Amy Otto because sadly she is having some car trouble, so she will not be here. But we have a great crowd today. I'd like to start off with Charles Fayt. Nice. F-E-Y-T. Fayt. And he's with Verity Partners and Verity View. Welcome to the show, Charles. How are you doing?
Fine. How are you today, Lee?
I am doing great. Do you mind sharing a little bit about Verity and what you guys are up to?
Sure. Verity View is a group of partners, former Big Five and Big Six and, I don't know, Big Three or Two.
What are we down to?
We're down to two or three now, I think.
Do you think there'll ever be just one?
There might be.
Just one day.
Maybe. We'll see.
Who's going to be the last man standing?
Hopefully not. Hopefully it'll be Deloitte if there was. But
okay. Going to keep my eye on Deloitte. I'll bet. Deloitte Long, right?
Right. Deloitte Consulting. So anyway, that's where I came from. A group of partners from Deloitte and McKinsey and Anderson all formed Verity Partners almost 6 years ago now. And we've been doing consulting primarily in Georgia. And we've developed a new capability where we do assessments of businesses on an automated basis now. It's much more efficient, and it's a product we call Verity View.
And then when you're saying, I'm not understanding what that means. So you go in and you assess the employees?
Well, we do the traditional range of consulting from strategic planning to operations review to integration technology. But often on those projects, consulting teams would have to go about doing lots of interviews and lots of data gathering, and it takes a lot of time.
Because they have to immerse themselves in the business so they can best advise them.
Right. And getting that data is sometimes hard and expensive, and you have to do a lot of interviews and a lot of data collection, and it takes a long time. So, and that's how we used to do it in years past when clients could pay a lot of money for consultants. Being a small firm, we had to kind of come up with a better, faster, cheaper way to do that and get meaningful data for analysis quicker. So we developed an automated capability called Verity View.
And this Verity View is, so now the employees can just go online and take some sort of an online...
Yeah, it's an online assessment. The difference is that... it's geared to specific business activities, so it's not a generalized survey. They actually, we go in, spend some time up front. So when we ask people where they spend their time and what they do, it's related to the actual activities that they actually perform on their job.
So would this be like in one department? Like would you go into the accounting department and then do everybody there?
Yeah, the nice thing about it is a lot of the different types of analysis would limit you as to what you could do by an individual department. So we can do it by a team or by a process or one department or two departments or multiple divisions and regions even and compare them.
So would that help the business owner or the firm kind of make sure that he's got the players in the right position? Is that what you're trying to do there?
It gives a snapshot. And what we've done is we've combined something that hasn't really been combined in one capability before. It takes a quick look at where people spend their time and what activities that they do. But at the same time, it also looks at what their work styles are and how they're matched to those particular activities, and also assesses their skill levels to do those activities.
Do you have an example of maybe when you've implemented this and you were able to kind of tweak the personnel so they had maybe a better result than they had previously?
Yeah, for one client in Atlanta, there were some issues between sales and sales support, and we were able to take a snapshot, and quickly we could see that some of the sales support activities were being done by salesmen. And we also found that some of the sales support activities that were being done, the people really didn't have the work styles or the skills to those particular activities. Right. And sure enough, that's where they were having some problems.
So then the employee would get frustrated. They weren't being as productive as they might be if they were better aligned. And then the firm was able to make changes and maybe put them in better positions.
Absolutely. I mean, it gets down to as simple as people do better doing what they like to do.
Right.
And what they're good at doing.
But how do you handle the situation where you got the guy in accounting that's like, oh, he should be painting murals. And it's like, well, we still need accounting.
Right,
you know?
Right.
The accounting's still got to get done.
Well, that's where the fun in getting to the detail versus general level becomes, because you find that pretty much in any area, there are sets of skills within those areas when you really look at the details of what goes on in a
right.
department. They're really quite different from one another. Mm-hmm. I mean, even in accounting, I mean, you have people that are doing the transactions.
Right.
You do other people that are doing the planning as to how the cash flow is going to work. They're just whole different sets of types of activities that are suited to different work styles.
So now this enables the firm to, like, is it an efficient and fast process? Like, once you do this assessment, are you able to kind of make the moves fairly quickly?
Yeah, Lee, that's one of the beauties of it. We did 1,600 people in five states for four different credit unions and an IT organization, and the impact on the individual is 20 minutes.
Oh, that's all it takes to take the
that's
assessment?
That's all it takes, right. And we were able to get data from 1,600 data points in just a couple of days. And within that time, we understood what all the activity costs were,
right?
Where the redundancies were and where the overlaps were and what different things cost the organization. We could see what groups had better training, better skills, and better capabilities, and which ones had real gaps. And sure enough, that showed up in their performance evaluations as well.
And then do the firms quickly act on this information, or is it something they just put in a file somewhere?
No, it's what's fun about it is every time we've done it, people are really surprised to learn what their folks are doing.
Right.
And sometimes people will
Is that a good thing that they're always surprised?
It's
or a bad thing that they're always surprised?
They see things that they can fix immediately.
Right.
Because you know, they might have had a policy they created 10 years ago
right,
that's never been
around.
Changed
right.
And it's been interpreted 10 different ways. And by the time it's slowed down, people are doing things that they no longer need to do.
Right.
And so they can, you know, focus them on higher value activities.
Now, how many clients do you have actually using this?
We've got about 20 clients now. About three of them are licensed clients and where they're off kind of doing this by themselves on an
right.
annual basis. And 20 clients that we've gone in the past few years and done this type of assessment.
Now, how are these assessments different than the like a Myers-Briggs assessment? Is it similar or is
yeah,
it?
That's a great question, Lee, because what we've done is we've combined the real sort of cost accounting. What does it cost? What are the hard and fast activities that people do? Where are the overlaps? And instead of looking at personalities, well, we look at work styles. Let me give you an example. Myers-Briggs, which was, I think, developed around World War II.
It's the same test?
Yeah. It's
really?
Very
it hasn't changed?
Dated. It hasn't changed.
Wow.
And it looks at basically personalities. So, in other words, they ask things like, is a person an extrovert or an introvert?
Right.
And they assume that, well, extroverts are better salespeople.
Right.
Well, that's not necessarily true. It depends on what kind of sales that they're doing. Are
right.
they order takers or are they actually going out and meeting clients? We get down to the actual specific activities that salesperson does and looks at his work style to see if there's, you know, really more detailed alignment there. And then we can do it not only by person, but by team or process or sales team. So you get a much better picture.
So you get a more customized assessment.
Yeah,
right.
Much more customized, much more detailed, and we think a much more relevant or accurate assessment of what's really going on in your organization with your particular business.
Now, does your team have to be retested every year, or is this like once you're tested, you kind of got a feel for that person's skills and what they can do, and then you can kind of move them where you need them to be?
Yeah, most people will stay pretty much in their strike zones. You know, they
right.
have a primary and a secondary strength. Some people move that around with a lot of work, but typically we do it once or a couple of times a year, because after we do it once, organizations will make changes either to the process or what people's responsibilities are, and they want to see if it works. So we come back and do another assessment, and we can quantify
right.
The changes, which is one of the things you can't really do with Myers-Briggs.
So do you have an example of how that was quantified and there was an improvement?
Yeah, there's, I mean, the data comes in to where you can actually see how much time it takes to do certain activities or to complete a process.
Right.
And by making the changes, you can now measure how much difference you can make. And we've seen 15 to 20% improvement in either process flow or productivity.
Now, does Verity come in and kind of design what the metrics of this will be to judge how successful we'll be at the end of the day?
Yeah.
Is that how you help them?
We do that usually in the first week with a client. We'll agree on what metrics make sense. We'll tailor the activities to, their particular business.
Right.
We'll determine with them what they think are high and low value activities and set up the survey questions. Nice thing about the survey, too, is we've designed it in a way that we get very high response rates and high accuracy through some tricks of the trade.
It's pretty easy for a person to take the assessment. It's not a painful process where they're digging deep into their childhood.
No, no, there's only really, I think, about 10 questions that deal with work style, and the rest is really focused on, their specific activities and where they spend their time.
Can you walk us through maybe how, when you start working with a client, how you would go about implementing something like this for the client? Let's take a sales organization, since you mentioned sales a few times.
Well, a sales organization, we would, we like to say, where are your biggest challenges?
Right.
And focus on those areas. But often we see challenges between sales and sales support, or
right.
sometimes sales and the technology department.
Right.
So we walk in with basically a template of a lot of sales activities already populated and sales support activities, that type of thing. And we'll go in and we'll review with the client what's unique about their activities. Do
right.
they call, sales follow-up something different
right.
than sales follow-up? And we get all their terms, so when the person sees the survey, it's all very familiar.
Right, it's
them.
All relevant to them. It's not just cut and pasted from
right.
some existing thing.
And it's not a generalized type
right.
of type of thing. We can get as detailed as the client wants. So we'll set that process up. We'll see if there are any other questions that they want to ask, since you don't want to do a survey more than you have to.
Right.
And the survey engine retains the data, so they can begin to use the survey for multiple things, even serving clients mm-hmm. to see how they interact with their sales team. So we'll set up the survey, and it goes out in an email, and people just click on the email, take the survey, and the database builds and all the reports build that give you individual views, team views, process
right.
views, activity costs, work style gaps in a very short period of time.
And then you take the data, you analyze it, and then you give them back a report that has your recommendations?
Right, right. And it's usually a fun time because everybody – most executives don't have the time to get into the details
right.
in their organization. There's just
sure.
too many things going on. So they get excited when they can finally see at a detail level what's really going on in their company.
Right.
And that's always,
Has there ever been a situation where, like, the C-suite person is, like, shocked?
Often.
Really?
Often.
Do you have a funny story, maybe, or something interesting that was just, like, he couldn't believe the result of something?
Yeah, I mean, there were still, funny from a business sense,
right.
I guess.
Not,
I mean,
David
people,
funny.
People are off documenting, things and requesting reports from divisions that are no longer there. And and they find people that they didn't know they had, that were on the payroll, but they didn't even exist.
Right.
Didn't know they existed.
We have a whole department that does this, and we don't even do that anymore.
Right. Right. So, that's kind of always interesting. And the costs are always interesting. I mean, for example, never realize they spend what they spend on meetings and
right.
and travel or, whatever it might be.
So from soup to nuts, when you get started and you say, hey, you got buy-in from them, let's do this, until they get that report, how long does that typically take?
It depends on, how many departments and
sure.
how many people, but it can range anywhere from 3 weeks to 9 weeks.
Okay, so within a couple months, they can get a pretty good assessment of where they stand.
Yeah, and I think they in that period of time, they can get more data than they currently have about their organization
right.
at a lot more level of detail and with things that they can actually act upon.
Now, if a firm was interested in engaging with you guys, what is the best way to reach out to you?
Give us a call, or our numbers and contact information is on our website at www.verityview.com.
And that's V-E-R-I-T-Y, right?
Right.
Verityview.com.
That's it.
All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show. Is there anything else you want to share? I think we got everything covered.
That's it.
Pretty good about that, Charles?
Yeah. Thank you, Lee. Thanks for your time.
All right. I appreciate it. We're going to move on now to this mother-daughter team here that they're chomping at the bit to get on the air. Sharon Morgenstern and Sarah Chambers, welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
Thanks for having us here, Lee.
All right. So now a mother and daughter business. Whose idea was this?
My
dad's.
The dad who is not here. Very good.
Yeah, the dad who didn't want to participate in it. But it's been in the back of our minds for about a couple years.
And why don't you first say what the business is, and then we'll get into how this all came about.
Okay, it's a franchise called Home Helpers.
Home Helpers. And
our business plan here is to do in-home healthcare, non-medical healthcare, and help people, elderly people, those in recuperative care, new moms, anything where someone might need a little extra hand around the house.
And then so your firm comes in and is that extra hand?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you target primarily elderly people?
I think our biggest market share is going to be the elderly.
Right.
There's so many in this area that need help. And we're here to help out the families to alleviate some of the pressure off the families.
Now, when a person engages with your firm, are they doing it through typically that elderly person, or is it a family member who wants to help out their mom or dad?
It usually starts out with a family member. They're the primary caregiver of the family, and it gets to the point where they have reached burnout because they've put their life on hold to take care of their aging parents. And they can only do this so long without them beginning to suffer themselves emotionally or even physically. So then they begin to need extra outside help.
Right. Now, how did you two get into this? Did you have that situation in your family? Did somebody need that help and then you guys kind of stumbled into it?
Actually, it was my mother, and she had a serious illness and accident. And it didn't turn out well for her because at that time we didn't know that these benefits were available.
Right. And so then you decided after a period of time, hey, you know what, why don't we do this and we can kind of fill this need so other people don't have to kind of go through what we went through?
Absolutely.
It was probably maybe 8 to 10 years in the workings where, like Mom said, she was making money and she needed to maintain that stream of income. So she's always wanted to do this, but until she reached a point where she was financially stable enough to do this, that now is the right time to do this, that we can take the leap, and that I've been working in the service industry now, so I'm familiar with turnover and how to make sure that there's people who can be called on and the business sense in that manner, that it seems like a really good fit right now, good timing for both of us.
Now, how did you guys decide who's going to be in charge of what?
Wait, I have a good one for this one. I'm the business one. I have an MBA. I know all the business stuff.
I'm sure your mom might have another opinion about this.
Not really.
She's pretty tough.
She's really tough. You don't even know. She's got more of the compassion and more of the understanding on the client's needs and how to handle what they are looking for. And I'm more of...
I think I'm going
to
have Charles maybe do an assessment for you guys. Make sure everybody's in the right place.
That'd be great.
Yeah, no, I take care of the interviews and who we hire, and I just deal with all the conversation that goes on.
Now, who breaks the ties?
Which kind of
ties? That would be me.
Tie goes to the daughter? Is that how this works?
Maybe.
So now, how do you guys handle disagreements? I mean, it's hard enough to have a family, mm-hmm. let alone to be in business with a family. That takes it to another level.
Okay, I'll go first on that one. We do have disagreements. We have tits all the time.
Right.
And basically, a little time we let go by, and then it's forgotten like it's never happened, or we address it and put it to bed.
Wow, that's great. Now, when you were deciding how to do this, since you're Miss MBA here, who you were in charge of all the agreements and who's going to get what and the split of the money and all that? That was your job?
Right. The beauty of that is it's 50-50.
Is it 50-50?
It is 50-50. Yes.
And so that was okay with everybody?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And running, you haven't had no problems? It's been smooth sailing?
Oh, heck no.
Is this like a family vacation where it's a party, or is this a,
we're
like something?
The Griswolds.
I was going to say that. It's like the Griswolds go to Europe.
Yeah.
Sounds like they need a consultant.
I think so. Right away. Is it better, Charles, is it better to get a consultant in early?
Always. Early and often.
Early and often. Okay. So, ladies, take us through a day in your life. What happens?
Well, Sarah can go first on that one.
In the course of the business, we're brand new. So right now we're trying to hire CNAs to...
CNA, what is that?
Certified nursing assistants.
Okay, so you need nursing assistants.
Mm-hmm. And yes, in the state of Georgia,
clients,
it's mandated.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, we need our CNAs first, so we can make sure that we have enough to cover if a client needs someone at a specific time. So right now we're in the process of hiring the CNAs.
Right.
People are applying, and then Mom will go through and do all the interviews, which she's great at reading people. Okay. Great at doing interviews. And then I'll come through and make sure everybody's set up with payroll, nonsense like that. And then we're going to go out and start finding clients.
Okay, so you're not at the finding client stage yet.
We are. We're just getting there.
Just getting started in there.
Yeah, our webpage is now are launched on the internet, so it'll make it much more accessible to
Now, is this the franchise's website, or did you guys have to build your own?
We had to build our own off of the franchise website.
Okay, so you used their template, I guess, and tweaked it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Now, so far, what's the biggest challenge so far has been finding the right CNA? Has that been a challenge for you guys?
No, not at all.
So that's easy.
Mm-hmm. But the hardest part was you can't do anything without having them, the certified CNAs, first, because the state won't let you.
Right.
So you're like in a catch-22. You have to have what you don't need before you can do what you want to do.
So it sounds like you guys have another vote for more government regulation. Right, that's what it sounds like.
One thing, though, that we've found a hard deal with is that people don't understand that, it costs money to have someone come into your home.
Right.
However, the cost is significantly less than if you were to go into an assisted living or a nursing home. And it also adds on quality of life and years onto this individual.
Right. And and that's an important message to get out, that you want to have the elderly person in their home as long as possible.
And have them in their best interest in mind.
Right, absolutely.
Actually, there is a psychological benefit to having an elder person age in place in home, physically and their emotional well-being. If you remove a person from their home, they experience grief over the loss of their home, which is safety. It means a haven.
Right.
It's safety to them. And to take it away from them can incur grief or make an illness worse.
Right. And that's a lot of the family members think they're doing their loved one a favor by moving them to an assisted living quickly. But in actuality, it's probably better.
It's going to shorten their lifespan because all their familiarity is gone.
Right. So
it's
friends, like starting new after 50 years. I mean, can you imagine how disruptive that would be to a younger person, let alone somebody who's been in their house for that long?
Right. Like with my grandmother, we ended up putting her in an assisted living. And within 6 months of her going into the assisted living, she died.
Wow.
Within 6 months.
Is that a common statistic?
It's common across the board. Definitely.
Right.
People just give up.
Right.
Because things have been taken away from them, they feel like they are now not a person.
Now, when you were looking for a franchise and when you were choosing, right, you knew you were going to be in this sector?
Yes.
Is that you had decided that?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So now you were just choosing amongst an array of different service providers, right?
Yes. Well, Entrepreneur Magazine has ranked Home Helpers as one of the top franchises for like the last 10 years, I believe it is. So I flew up there one day, listened to everything, and got a really good feel for what they had to say.
Right. And did you go into some of their franchise owners' businesses and kind of immerse yourself?
We did talk to a bunch of them. We didn't physically go visit, but we talked to a lot of them on the phone.
And that made you more comfortable in your decision?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And then for you, had you worked already previously?
Yes.
So you had a career and you
yes.
said, I'm bailing there and I'm going to do this.
Yes.
How was that decision?
Well, technically, I'm still there.
Oh, okay.
I'm the marketing manager for a service industry company.
Okay, so and you still have a job. Mm-hmm,
I do. So I.
So you didn't go in with both feet. You're in.
Oh, I'm in with both feet. I'm working two full-time jobs. I don't sleep much at all.
Wow.
Right. So during the regular business day, I'm at work.
Uh-huh.
And as soon as
so where are you now? This is lunch? Or you're on a
yeah, I'm
client
lunch.
Meeting? Client meeting?
Yes, but as soon as I get home, I start doing everything else. So wow. I'm 24 hours a day working.
Wow.
7 days a week.
So how's that working for you?
I'm really tired.
Really tired. Do you see the light at the end of the tunnel on this?
Absolutely.
So when this thing goes online and you're getting clients, are you going to have to leave your other job?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to slowly leave and maybe work contract there? And
No, I would make the full-fledged.
Okay, so there's at some point there's going to be a full leap
yes.
into this.
Yes,
wow.
Definitely. And this is one of the things that I've always wanted to do is run my own business.
Right.
So
with your mom.
Yes, we'll throw that in there, sure.
Sure, we'll go with that.
Wait, no, what better way to do that? With
right.
both exactly. my parents are, they're entrepreneurs. They both have owned their own business always, so
right.
that's all I've ever known.
Right.
And for me to work for someone else is completely outside right. my comfort zone.
Exactly. So you feel good about this?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Do you have brothers, sisters?
I have an older brother.
So what's he think of this arrangement?
He's not interested in this. He's got his own thing going.
Because, I mean, family business is its own little idiosyncrasies.
Yes, it is.
So the older brother is supportive of this, though, overall?
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good. And you said it was your dad's idea to kind of...
Well, he's a contractor in... an inspector of homes. So
he's probably seen a lot of nightmare things.
Well, he has the capacity for free time, so he's home. And when we're not there, he answers the calls
okay.
and directs the
So it's a whole family operation going mm-hmm. here.
Basically.
It's really good to have someone at home who can, you know, field questions and things
right.
like that if I can't get to the phone
sure.
or mom can't get to the phone.
All right, so you guys are not, well, I guess you'd be open to people asking and inquiring about your business now,
definitely.
Customers.
Absolutely.
But you're still looking for CNAs or you got enough?
We have a nice pool right now. Right
okay,
now
so
our
good
main
about
focus
that.
Is clients.
So mm-hmm. now you're in the client finding mode. So
yes.
if somebody wanted to learn more about your operation and what you guys do and how you help the seniors, where would they go?
We are available on our website, www.homehelpers.cc. And then you can search for us by zip code or Sandy Springs, Dunwoody, we're in
right.
those areas.
Is there more than one Home Helpers here in Atlanta?
There's one other one in the greater Atlanta area.
Okay.
But if you search by zip code, you'll be able to find us.
And that's how it works. You just put in the zip code
mm-hmm.
and the one closest to
yes.
you pops up.
Yes.
Cool. Is there anything else people should know about you guys?
Well, if they needed a shoot out an email, if
you
people
wanted
send
them
emails.
Email? Okay.
You can reach us directly at homehelpersnorthatlanta@yahoo.com.
Okay, so that they can reach you by email that
mm-hmm.
way or go to the website and drill down to your
yes.
By mm-hmm. zip code. Well, thank you, ladies, for being here, and we really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Next up, we have Eric Wolf, the brains behind Zero G Creative.
I wouldn't go that far.
You're not the brains. You're the heart and soul of that operation.
Fair enough.
Okay, so you've been on the show before. You've talked about lots of stuff. Today, what are we going to be talking about?
Online marketing.
Online marketing.
Online marketing.
Are you for it or against it?
Usually for it.
Usually for it. So what's a common mistake people make in their online marketing?
I think that the sort of the most fundamental mistake that people tend to make is misdiagnosing performance problems on their website. Your website, just like any other sales process, has a sales funnel.
Right.
You have visitors to your website. They come in the top of the funnel, and then something happens to them, and a few pop out the bottom as leads or sales. Or
Should every website be designed in order to create a sale?
Well, no, not necessarily. Different websites have different objectives. Some websites are designed to help you sell via e-commerce or...
Right, some are very direct, like,
some,
you know, buy my stuff. Or,
yeah.
But, like, say, like, somebody, like we had Charles on earlier, his firm, I'm sure, sells a very complicated product, it would be difficult for someone to just click and buy his service.
Everyone should click and buy.
They should, but you know, it'd be,
I don't know. Can you run a credit card for that kind of transaction, Charles?
I'm sure
you know, we haven't set it up, but we'd like to get there.
Is that true, Charles?
Would we actually would. Yeah, we've talked about trying to set it up in a way that people, and you can't go on now and just take a self-assessment for free.
Right.
But we'd like to set it up to where companies could kind of set it up themselves and run their own assessment just from our site.
Right.
That'd be great.
See that? We just opened up some doors.
And see the lead generation we're doing here?
That's right. but a lot of folks aren't actually looking to make a actual monetary sale on their website. They're looking for leads and opportunities. Some people just really want to be want a website that qualifies them as a vendor, that makes them look reputable and things like that.
Right.
But in the scenario where you're actually trying to sell something, or you are or you're actually trying to gather leads, what happens a lot of times is that there's a problem, assuming that you have an online marketing problem. There's a problem somewhere in the sales funnel, but people don't understand where it is. So what we call the difference between the number of the people that go in and the number of people that come out as leads or sales, that's the conversion rate.
Right.
So if I get 100 people come to my website, and five of them become leads, well, then I've just converted 5% of my web traffic. And that's really not bad. But let's say I was only converting 5 people out of 1,000, or 5 people out of 5,000, or something like that. What a lot of business owners will do incorrectly is look at that and say, well, geez, I need some more traffic.
They think that traffic is typically the problem?
Traffic is blamed for a lot of ills on the web. And in that scenario, it's really not a traffic issue why you're not selling enough. It's that your website is doing a very poor job of converting visitors. Now, conversely, if I did have a really solid conversion rate, I'm really happy with proportionally the way that I convert people that come to my website. Then the thing that I should be asking is, well, what about that traffic? What can I do to increase traffic? Should I go and buy some clicks via AdWords? Do I do search engine optimization? Do I do some other online advertising? But understanding where your online marketing needs really are and how that sales funnel works is absolutely key to having a successful strategy.
But how do you know what the problem is? How do you know if it's a traffic problem or a conversion problem?
Well, the first thing that we want to look at, well, number one, we do want to see the traffic. And number two is we want to understand what that conversion rate is. And we want to monitor that and see if we're happy with that. If the conversion rate is great, then by all means, find ways to get more traffic. But when you've got a really poor conversion rate, more traffic isn't going to help
you. It's just making it worse.
Yeah, you're just going to spend a whole lot more money to convert the same number of people.
Right. Now, you had mentioned search engine optimization. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So search engine optimization is actually another thing that I think that a lot of business owners, especially small business owners, have sort of a fundamental misunderstanding of.
Right. It's like a mythological creature.
Yes, exactly. It's the unicorn standing atop the mountain.
The magic SEO expert that's going to magically drive lots and lots of eyeballs to your website.
And it usually starts like this. I come to the somebody emails me on my website.
That's right there is a bad
and
sign,
says,
isn't it?
So that's the first bad sign. And then the email goes something like this. I am going to make you number one on Google. Pay me $500. And I'm going to make you number one. Look at all of the traffic you're missing out on. So what I say to those people is, well, you know, number one, if I'm so hard to find, where did you get my number? But beyond that, everybody is just looking at search engine optimization as sort of a what's in it for me type of thing. It's not about that. It's about how can we make Google happy?
Right.
that's successful search engine optimization because, you know, people are looking, they say, oh, you know what, I can trick Google. No, you can't trick Google. Start with the assumption that Google is smarter than you are. What you want to do is look at and Google gives us insight on all of this stuff as to they don't tell us the nitty-gritty details. But
they want
tell
you
us,
to be found.
But like, they want you to be found.
Right.
And
it's
they,
in Google's best interest for you to find what you're looking for.
Because Google wants to be the best search engine on the internet. Right. They want to connect their users with the best results available. And so they want to put, when for any given keyword search, they want the best website to come up on top. What makes a good website? It means that you've got really, really good content. It means that your content is updated frequently.
What is frequently defined as in Google's eyes?
Obviously it's relative because if I'm in an industry and there are a lot of old school industries where folks don't update their website very often, think construction, think legal. So if I'm playing in an industry where my competitors update their website once every 5 years, I'm ahead of the game even if I just do it once every 6 months.
Right.
But generally when we're talking about building search engine credibility, I like to tell people that they should plan on doing stuff about once a week.
And then this is on their website, or is this, would a blog be?
A blog on your website would serve that purpose beautifully.
That would serve
beautifully.
That purpose.
Because this is why, so we hear things like, oh, well, Google likes blogs. Well, why do they like blogs? They like blogs because it's putting good, relevant content on your website on a very regular basis, assuming that you're blogging regularly.
And you're blogging about whatever it is your business
and
is
and
about.
You're blogging about subject matter that's relevant to your business. And so Google likes that a lot because it fits right into what they're trying, what they want to do.
What about these, like a blog is one thing, but what about something like a Facebook or a LinkedIn page or Twitter feed? Like those are social media kind of outlets. How do they come into play in terms of the optimization of the website?
So in terms of from an SEO standpoint, for a long time it was sort of questioned what impact social media had on your search engine optimization.
Right.
And the reason why it was a question had to do with a whole lot of technical stuff that I won't get into.
But what about the fact that Facebook and Google are competitors?
Well,
does Google punish Facebook and reward YouTube because Google owns YouTube?
No, they don't. Google has decided that, and I think that they made a really good decision, and not only in deciding this, but making it public, that sharing via social media and having yourself shared, so if I post something on my Twitter or I post something on my Facebook, that's wonderful, but they're measuring the impact of that content. And so something that I post on Twitter that gets retweeted 10 times.
Right. You're getting points for that in Google's eyes?
I'm getting points for that in Google's eyes. If I post content that's shared heavily on Facebook or liked heavily on Facebook, I'm getting points from Google on that. Now, it's not...
It's not going to catapult you to number one.
No, and certainly not overnight. But it's another, sort of handful of pebbles in the bucket that...
Right. It's another data point for Google to assess your website to see if you're one of the top relevant, timely, fresh.
Right, and one of the things. So one of the things that Google has done is not only are they looking at what's on your website, but Google has said, from day one, they were really up on this idea of the internet sort of as a popularity contest, where the more people talk about you, the better your rankings are.
Right.
And so this concept of backlinking and being talked about on other people's websites has became really, really important. And it was wondered whether or not social media actually makes an impact, and it does.
Right. But it's just one, like you said, pebbles in a bucket. A little,
right.
Every little bit helps.
Absolutely.
Now, what about, okay, so theoretically, I get all this. I should be blogging. I should be doing all these things because pebbles count.
Do it.
Right? I should be doing all this stuff. I'm trying to do my job. Like, how do I have the time to do all of the things necessary in order to make my website appear at the top of Google?
Well, you've got to do Well, a couple of things. The first thing that you've got to do is decide exactly what you're going to do and where you want to go and all of that good stuff. And if you are going to do blogging and if being ranked highly on the search engines is really important to you, you have to have a strategy for that, and you have to make it work into your life. You have to be able to do this once a week, or not necessarily do it once a week, but publish it once a week. One thing that we tell people is if you can't set that appointment with yourself every week, well, you know what? Do it once a month. Do it once every 2 months.
And then just roll it out on a weekly basis.
And then just roll it out on a weekly basis. Most of your blog packages, WordPress being the most being the most popular, will allow you to post and schedule things to appear in advance, so you can set it and forget it. Like Ron Popeil says,
that's really a interesting comment of making it kind of part of your life or part of your routine. You think about that,
right? You just schedule it in the calendar.
Yeah. Well, it's like any good business habit. You know, you have to back up your files. You have to close the books. Mm-hmm. You have to do all of these. You have to do your payroll. All of these things that business owners make time for because they're necessary. If marketing via the internet is part of your business success and it's a requirement, then it needs to be part of that routine.
Right. That's a really important point to make. I appreciate that. Now, is this some of the stuff you cover in your book, Marketing Unmasked? Do you cover some of this stuff?
Yeah, we talk a lot about online marketing. We talk about the types of things that make your website better. You know, we talk about the mistakes that we see a lot of people make on the web, especially from a small business perspective, because a lot of small business owners haven't done this before. They haven't been through this process.
Especially the ones that have come like from maybe a big corporation and now they got their own business. You know, somebody else was always in charge of this kind of part of their business.
A lot of times, most people start businesses because they have a passion about something.
Right.
And generally speaking,
it's not the marketing
part. We have businesses too, but we run agencies and stuff like that. So aside from that, you know, a lot of the small business owners, and we've been working exclusively with small and growing businesses for it'll be 5 years in a couple months, and most of them don't have a marketing background.
Right. Well, you guys do great work. I endorse you wholeheartedly, as people may know, in terms of transparency. You guys do the website for Atlanta Business Radio.
We do.
And we're very proud of it, and we're very proud of our association with you guys, and we love working with you. Can you share your contact information with others that might be interested in having a website as awesome as the Atlanta Business Radio X?
Well, actually, the Atlanta Business Radio X site is about to get awesomer. So,
if that's even possible.
If that's even possible in coming soon. But you can reach me at zerogcreative.com. That's Z-E-R-O, letter G, creative.com. And you can reach me on Twitter, Eric Wolf, Erikwolf.
And then also you have a blog, I'm sure. And also on your website, I believe they can get the ebook of Marketing Unmasked. If they don't want to spring for the whole book, they can get that online as well, right?
Yeah, it's the full thing. It's just a PDF. We don't, you know, if you don't want to plunk down $20 on Amazon.
You can still get the information.
You can still get the information.
All right, Eric. Well, I appreciate you being on the show, and I appreciate all the guests being on the show. And that wraps up another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. Hopefully, Amy will be here next week. And this is Lee Cantor signing off.